Thank you, Samin, for that introduction. As Samin said, so most of what I study really has been evidence-based practice in social work. And over the past year, year and a half, I've really been struck by how well public health frameworks of translational research really tie into the social justice component that is always so interesting to social workers. So let me start with the context in which I started thinking about these topics. Health disparities has become a term that's become very common, I think largely thanks to the good work of public health. And the example I'm going to share with you today, talk about why would one tropical nation have more malaria cases than another. And I think that's kind of an esoteric example, but it really highlights how there's an increased focus on recognizing that prevention efforts could have differential levels of success and realizing that we need to look into why that might be. So one example in social work that's gotten more attention lately is the question of why African-American women see more breast cancer cases than Caucasian women. But broadly speaking, in social work and social welfare, this kind of estimating prevention effectiveness really hasn't taken hold all that well. And I think one of the dilemmas that we face in this context when it hasn't taken hold very well is that there's the possibility of really substantial disparity and inequality simply sliding right under the radar to the point where people don't even recognize that it's an issue. There's often a structured lack of access to empirically well-supported social work interventions. And so while we have the new focus on translational research, again, often thanks to public health efforts, we're still new to this field. So kind of an operational definition of translational research, we can look at the metaphor of translating research findings and best practices out of the laboratory into daily life. If we want to beat the metaphor into the ground, we might say translating the dictionary of the laboratory into the lexicon of daily life. So really, in a nutshell, encouraging and evaluating the uptake of daily practices is what translational research tries to do. The problem that I see in so much social welfare is that too often we use this kind of business approach that emphasizes successful diffusion of innovations, but does not look at planful dissemination of interventions devoted to reducing health disparity. And so again, this is kind of preaching to the choir at this conference, but in social welfare, it's really uncommon for people to even think in these kinds of demographic terms about social welfare. You know, if we have so many homeless people, we need so many housing programs. If we have so many partially disabled people, we need so many sheltered workshops. In social work, historically in the US, there's been this notion of entrepreneurial expansion and kind of the courageous vision of the founder, and we have these grassroots organizations pop up, which is great, but which doesn't get at the macro level problem. And so another way I think about this is, how do we measure success? If you take a diffusion of innovations approach, you kind of start at zero and you get a point for every intervention you successfully diffuse. If you take more of a disparities approach, I kind of think of it as you start at -1 or -100%, the idea that no one has access to the intervention. And then your score gets better as it gets lower. When your score is zero, that means nobody is shut out of the intervention. Nobody has missed access to the intervention. So in some ways, kind of seeing the glass half empty might actually be more worthwhile than seeing it half full. So some of the key points I want to leave you with today, just to really emphasize, to the extent that empirically well-supported interventions are not treatment as usual, are not standard of care, in social welfare and social services, as well as in medicine and public health, we are facing substantial disparity and inequality in public health, in global well-being. And so within the social services, if we rely only on a marketplace-oriented diffusion of innovations approach, we will never touch on the social justice, social injustice aspect of these disparities. And so as social work and social welfare is already pretty fragmented, more and more reliant on ad hoc approaches and paraprofessionals, it would benefit us tremendously to use a more macro-level public health framework that helps us return to notions of the common good and the public health. So just really quickly, I think I'm going to skip over this really quick. In social work, we acknowledge we have lots of problems using innovations as it is. And Eileen Gambrill at Berkeley has talked very effectively about hurting in the name of helping, the realization that we sometimes continue bad practices simply because of authority, authority-based practice, tradition. Often we're not measuring outcomes, so we don't know that they're so bad. I would add to a few of these what I've seen on the translation end, kind of what I call hesitating in the spread of helping. Like, we use translational research to identify what should be translated, but then we kind of stop. And sometimes this is just simply neglectful management of the process. We just don't know. Once we identify something good, we don't know how to move it forward. And then again, the culprit that I so often see, we manage under one sided assumptions, or is another way to say it might be, we manage for the market and only the market. We don't manage from the top down macro level, looking at who was left out. And so in terms of translational research, I also think it's really important to be clear what translational research is not. So certainly we need to plan for market reality. We need to plan for capacity constraints. But I think we really become at risk for defining the whole of translational research as merely meeting the market. So utilization or translation is not simply a successful product launch. It's not simply innovating a new product. And certainly in social work, we've seen plenty of examples where unsuccessful, ineffective interventions and products have been launched very successfully. And so I think we have to ask some hard questions. Does it achieve outcomes for typical clients without artificial settings? Can it be delivered by typical staff? Does it work with or only with a specific type of client or a specific setting? If we have to do targeting, how much resource and energy and time and money do we have to reserve to do targeting to make sure the intervention still works? So in sum, does it help all or most of the people who need to be helped? And if not, who was left out? And so I think these questions can be a little counterintuitive. Something that's been hard to talk about in social work is the fact that translational research wants to see robust interventions. We want the biggest common denominator possible, and we don't want unnecessary specialization that adds cost or complexity. Specializing solely for the sake of specializing can result in boutique treatments that already increase the existing fragmentation that we see in social service delivery. And so in evidence-based practice in social work, this can become part of the problem in an ironic way. The starting point is often how to specialize, and so you have 5 million kinds of cognitive behavioral therapy, but sometimes we specialize when we could actually use a robust intervention that doesn't need specialization. Another issue in the U.S. context is that social welfare is so often years and even a generation behind the curve in terms of what innovative interventions that are effective have kind of gotten stuck in the pipeline. And so what this means for social welfare practice is that we start in an environment of existing disparity. And so what typically happens then is we see, using the term underserved, but when we use the term underserved, we usually are referring to any service, not specifically an empirically well-supported intervention with a demonstrable track record. And so when social welfare exists in this environment of existing disparity, what happens is that interventions kind of become promoted that tug the heartstrings, and they're assumed to be better than nothing, when in fact that might not be the case at all. They might be expensive wastes of time, they might be actually harmful, and we just don't know because the pressure is on to get something out there. John Brecke at USC is a great example in his region of how they actually did the demographic work of identifying number of people with schizophrenia, number of treatments available to them. And Brecke and colleagues found that for every 10 people with schizophrenia, one was receiving an evidence-based treatment, two were receiving something else, and seven were receiving nothing. And so it's kind of this imperative in social welfare too often has been to do something rather than to do something effective. And that also becomes part of the problem in translational research. I'm going to get a little technical here a little bit, just to flesh out translational research a little bit more. So many of you are probably familiar with the idea of T1 translational research, the idea from bench to bedside, getting innovations out of the laboratory into the field. T2 translational research is this idea of extending the field, so kind of from bedside to bedside through the field, and helping interventions at the farthest removed from the laboratory have a good uptake. And so what this means to me is that we have to look at the state of translation for a given intervention. So utilization is usually looked at from the micro level on a case-by-case basis. First, we get an intervention successfully launched in one site or one agency, then we do a second site, then we do a third site. But we seem to miss this macro component of the given how much need we estimate, where is the diffusion of the intervention? What needs remain untranslated or unmet? And so the NIH has done a nice job, I think, of encouraging people to expand the conceptualization of translational research and to work it into the entire research process. They've emphasized, you know, that their good research identifies both the problem and the extent or the scope of the problem. Good research identifies aspects of the problem that we can do something about, that can reduce risk or enhance resilience. Good research identifies problems in intervention design. And then we can move to effectiveness trials that identify what patterns of implementation have been successful and dissemination trials that can identify where patterns of uptake have been successful. So this one example I've really found almost a wonderful exemplar for social work and social welfare. It's a Tugwell and colleagues equity effectiveness framework. And it's what I like about it so much is that it specifically focuses on social components of behavior that affect translation, and that affects everything from what outcomes you should be looking at to what kind of community health workers could be working on what kind of behaviors. So the equity effectiveness framework is systematic, it's comprehensive, it specifically focuses on rooting out the disadvantaged subpopulations that might otherwise be overlooked, and it anticipates barriers from the market to institutions to socioeconomic status and as well as behavior factors. So how can these barriers be overcome one by one so that everyone who can benefit from the intervention can receive it? And so the notion of equity effectiveness, in terms of effectiveness, we're all pretty familiar with this idea of meta-analysis and pooled effect sizes. What I think is really interesting about the equity effectiveness ratio that Tugwell and colleagues calculate is this idea that that effective but unequal, effective but hard to access, is still a problem, that you don't have true effectiveness when you have that that issue of lack of uptake. And so again, in this model, we're getting away from the idea of simply successfully launching products, launching innovations, and directly focusing on the barriers to uptake of interventions. And in U.S. social work, it's interesting in that, in some sense, international development also relies on paraprofessional workers, but sometimes I think they use them so much better. And again, in the malaria example, it's a case of life and death, but so much social welfare is also a case of life and death, and how we deploy and use our community health workers, I think, becomes really important. In social work, we have a really good track record of using paraprofessionals specifically for direct practice that builds and maximizes client engagement and really allows problem behaviors to be addressed with clients. And so we have the service infrastructure. I think it's really a case of adding the macro component that allows intervention to be incrementally increased and uptake to be increased. And so again, I would just really caution with over-reliance on the diffusion of innovations approach, because so much of what social welfare ends up doing, I think of as mopping up after the market, that just simply relying on essentially a business model to expand intervention is a mistake, given that so much of the context is not economically logical or rational. And so incremental utilization and scaling up is an essential part of evidence-based practice, but the incremental scaling up never precludes a top-down or macro view of the entire scope of the problem. Now, Jeffrey Sachs has a nice example that I sometimes say for shock value. When he talks about the solution to extreme poverty is that extreme poverty becomes moderate poverty, moderate poverty becomes relative poverty, and then poverty is eliminated. I think the same mindset, extending interventions bit by bit until their coverage catches everyone who could benefit from them, but is time-consuming, but is a really important part of the process, that simply scaling up one by one is not enough. You have to be able to see the glass as half empty as well as half full. And let me conclude with some of the thoughts I want to leave you with today. In terms of translational research, I think we've got a good working or operationalized definition. I think the NIH components of translational research help expand on how we can understand that. And I think looking at human interaction between workers and clients can also be helped by using these frameworks. Public health frameworks that take a comprehensive and preventative view of social problems, I think, are really going to be the future in social welfare and social policy. And in social welfare, as fragmented as it is, the need for these macro frameworks are increasingly important. And I would also add that both social work and public health as disciplines have a really fine track record of being practical, applied disciplines that don't get stuck in their individual silos. And so I think the more that health and well-being translational research becomes emphasized, it offers a powerful way for the applied social sciences to learn from one another, avoid tripping over disciplinary boundaries, and contributing in that way to increased well-being and prevention. I'll go ahead and stop there.